All right, so today we are doing neuro. And neuro is one of the more involved systems that we are going to assess. So when we talk about the anatomy of the nervous system, we start out with the central nervous system, which is the brain and spinal cord, and the peripheral, which is the cranial nerves and spinal nerves. Le brain first. The brain is separated into parts. The outer part of the brain is called the cerebral cortex. Cortex is the Latin for rind or shell. So this is what we refer to as, inside is what we refer to as gray matter. It's what makes a person think. Makes you smart. So it's separated into several lobes. So you have the frontal lobe, the parietal lobes, the temporal lobes, and the occipital lobes. Now, which of those is the primary lobe that is used for thought? The frontal. Darn. All right. In addition, we have what we call Wernicke's area, which is what we use to receive communications. If there's a problem with Wernicke's area, the person will have what we call receptive aphasia, which you are familiar with from Billy Madison. Huh? Billy Madison. I can't hear what you're saying. I see your lips moving, but I can't hear the words. I've been abused in the ear. So, receptive aphasia is when the person knows something is being communicated to them, but they can't understand what's being communicated. Broca's area is what's responsible for giving communication. It's what we call, if someone has a problem with Broca's area, they will have what's called expressive aphasia, which is, I know what I want to say, but I just can't get it out. So these two areas are commonly damaged with what neurological problem? Stroke. So a lot of times after a stroke, a person will have either one or the other or both of these types of aphasia, where either they can't understand what's being said to them or they can't express what they want to say, sometimes both. And what's interesting is sometimes they'll have, say, expressive aphasia in that they can't talk, but they can still write. So sometimes it will be even more specific in their type of aphasia.
Are some of these, like, temporary or permanent?
It can be either way, depending on the amount of damage done. Typically, though, that can come back, especially with medical therapy. All right, next we have le brain continued. So we have the cerebrum, the top part of the brain, and then going down we have some other parts. We have the cerebellum, we have the brainstem. So the basal ganglia is what's responsible for motor function. Now, what is a ganglia? It's a collection of cell bodies. So the cell body collection is at the base of the brain. That's why it's called the basal ganglia. We have the thalamus, which is kind of like a relay station for the brain. It's kind of like the operator. Where do you want to go from here? Just below the thalamus, we have the hypothalamus. Hypo for below. That's responsible for things like heart rate, blood pressure, sleeping, etc. So it's kind of like the part of your brain that's responsible for animal functions. Then we have the cerebellum, which is kind of toward the back of the brain, and it's responsible for motor coordination. So I want everyone to hold your arm straight out in front of you. Bend your arm. Now, in order for you to bend your arm, what had to happen? Muscles in your bicep had to contract, right? But at the same time, what else had to happen? Muscles in your tricep had to relax. So otherwise, what would happen? Nothing would happen. So the coordination of, in order to move, these muscles need to contract and these ones need to relax. And what degree of contraction, what degree of relaxation, what's responsible for that is the cerebellum. Question? Just showing us that cerebellar function. Below the cerebellum, we have the brainstem, which is made up of several different parts. We have the midbrain, the pons, and the medulla oblongata. the oblong core or center. That's responsible for respiration, heart, GI functions, cranial nerves 8 through 12. All right, the spinal cord itself is arranged in what we call horns. If you take the spinal cord and you slice it straight across and you look at it from the top or from the bottom, it will look like a butterfly. And with the wings being what we call the horns. So the nerve pathways cross in the spinal cord for certain types of stimulation, especially sensation. So if you feel something on the right side of your body, the nerve is going to travel in through the horn, cross to the other side, to the left side of the spinal cord, and then go up to the brain. And there will be a synapse at that area. So there you go. Now, sensation happens along two pathways. Say two pathways. Now, how many of you live down south? All right. You can come up via 95 or US 1. Okay, and you also got the turnpike. All right. Okay, and Tri-Rail. Okay, yeah, Tri-Rail. Okay, you can come by Tri-Rail or you can come by I-95. Okay, so you have two possible ways you can come. Which one's faster? I-95. Depends on traffic. Yeah. I mean, now, the Tri-Rail goes slower, but in some traffic conditions, it might be faster to go on the Tri-Rail. Of course, then once you're at the Tri-Rail station, then what do? Walk through the rain? I thought you walked through the rain.
What?
What?
Is that what you do?
Yeah. I arranged for it to rain right when I... Yeah, it's been very annoying lately. It had rain when I come into work, so I can't drive with the top down. It's like, what's the point?
Yeah.
But, you know...
It's protecting your skin, though.
Yeah. A chamois on your head.
You're trying to kill yourself.
It's better to fade out. No, it's better to burn out than to fade away. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, your brain or your body has two pathways for sensation to get from your fingers or your toes or wherever else on your body up to the brain. One way is the spinothalamic tract. The other is the posterior columnar. Now, the spinothalamic tract is what's responsible for pain, temperature, crude and light touch. So, hit yourself. Pain, spinothalamic tract. Temperature. That feels nice and warm. Oh, it's so nice and cool in here, thank goodness. Oh my gosh. Spinothalamic. Crude and light touch. Somebody's touching me. Ooh, this feels nice. Feel that texture. Those are all spinothalamic. Then the posterior columnar tract does not cross sides. It stays on the same side. So it's responsible for position. So I want everyone to close their eyes. Hold your hand up. Now move your hand up with your eyes closed. Now, did you know that your hand is higher? How did you know? I just did. Okay, so position sense. Position sense is the posterior columns. Now, put your hand down on the table. Now, tap the table. What do you feel?
Vibrations.
Feel vibrations. Is that vibrations? Posterior columnar. Now, finely localized touch. I want you to close your eyes, and then I want you to find your pen by touching it and go, this is my pen. Now, how do you know that's a pen and not a piece of paper? Okay, so it's what we call finely localized touch. The ability to discriminate touch is posterior columns. So guess what? When we assess people, guess what we want to assess?
Both.
So we're going to assess pain. You can assess temperature, but it's a little bit of a pain in the butt to do sometimes. So we're going to skip temperature. We're going to do crude and light touch. And then we are going to do... position sense, vibration, and finally localized touch. We're going to get something sharp and we're going to stab our patients with it. I mean, we're going to get something sharp and we're going to like prick them just very gently.
Really?
Yes. Really? But we're not going to, we are not going to draw blood though. There must be no scars. All right. The spinal cord itself. Motor pathways. Corticospinal tract, also called the pyramidal tract, because there's a portion of the brain that looks like a little pyramid, so that's called the pyramidal tract. So they all go through the medulla's pyramid. We have both crossed and uncrossed pathways. This is what's responsible for finer body movements. So take your finger and put it on your thumb. This is what we call the pincer grasp. This is fine movement. Do this. Fine movement. Whew, that's a crude movement. So crude movements are done through the extrapyramidal tract. They go around the medulla's pyramid. So this is cruder movement like walking. Then we have upper and lower motor neurons, like arms versus legs. So you want to test walking, and you also want to test upper body. All right, reflex arcs. Now, there's going to be a test question. Maybe not on the quiz, maybe on the final. Maybe in Pathopharm. But you will have a question that asks you about reflexes. So we need to understand them properly. Now, in a reflex arc, we have three different kinds of reflexes. We have what we call deep tendon reflexes, where the tendon is stretched, it will cause the muscle to contract. We have what we call superficial reflexes, which a superficial stimulus will cause a reaction. So the corneal reflex is what makes you blink your eye when something gets in your eye. The abdominal reflex is what makes a person tense up their muscles when they get tickled. Then we have what we call visceral reflexes, which are deeper. And so pupillary light, if you shine a light in someone's eye, what will their eye do? The pupil will constrict. Accommodation, if you focus on something close, pupils will constrict. And then there are some pathologic reflexes, which we'll also talk about a little bit later. Now, we don't have air. In order for us to have a motor reflex, so we'll use deep tendon reflex as the example. We need an intact sensory nerve. So imagine for a moment that we're going to whack your knee and make your leg do pop out like that, a deep tendon reflex. So we need a neuron that will sense that the tendon is being stretched. Then we need a functional synapse because it goes from the sensor up to the spine. We need a synapse there. Then there will be another synapse to go back down to the muscle and tell the muscle to contract. And then we need a muscle that can contract. So these are what we need. There's the sensory nerve, two synapses, a motor nerve, and a competent muscle. Now notice what is not in that picture. Okay. All right, and what would be responsible for that? The brain. So what is not in that picture? The brain. What is not in that picture? What is not in that picture? So if we have a patient who is a vegetable, will they have normal or abnormal reflexes? Normal reflexes. Being a vegetable has to do with brain dysfunction. Reflexes have nothing to do with the brain. Repeat after me. Reflexes have nothing to do with the brain. So you're probably going to get a question that reads something like this. You have a patient who's had a head injury, but they do not have a spinal cord injury. What kind of reflexes do you expect they'll have? And the answer would be normal, because the brain has nothing to do with reflexes. Now, there is one slight caveat. Now, what I want you to do is I want you to tense up your leg muscle. Now, no matter how much we whack that tendon, are we ever going to get a reflex out? No, because the muscle's already contracted. So sometimes in a brain injury, the person will be in a contracted state. And in that case, you can't get a reflex. It's not because the reflex isn't there. It's because the muscle's already contracted. So that is the caveat. All right, cranial nerves. Okay, cranial nerve number one. Olfactory. Cranial nerve number two. Ocular. Cranial nerve number three. Oculomotor. Cranial nerve number four. Trochlear. Cranial nerve number five. Trigeminal. Cranial nerve number six. You guys are doing really good. You lost it. Abducens. Cranial nerve number seven. Facial. Cranial nerve number eight. Vestibulocochlear. Number nine. Glossopharyngeal. Number 10. Vagus. Number 11. Spinal accessory and hypoglossal. All right. You guys would think you went over that just yesterday. Oh, we did. All right, so you must know the cranial nerves, the number, and what they mean. Knowing what they mean should help you understand what they do. So, cranial nerves. Now, spinal nerves, we've got one pair for each vertebrae. So there are eight cervical vertebrae. There are then eight cervical pairs of spinal nerves. You have 12 thoracic vertebrae, therefore you have 12 thoracic pairs. 5 lumbar, 5 sacral, 1 coccygeal. Sensory cell bodies are in the dorsal horns, and motor are in the ventral. Then there's something that's called a dermatome. What is a dermatome? Something to do with skin. Very good. And this is what subject today? Neuro. So something to do with neuro and skin. What do we think that could be? Nerves that go to the skin. Very good. So as it turns out, each nerve, each spinal nerve, innervates a certain band of skin. The band of skin that responds to a given nerve is called a dermatome. So if you look on a chart of dermatomes, you'll see little bands going across the body, and each one of those bands represents a different nerve. Now, there's a reason that's important. What do you think it is? Because if you have an injury to a specific nerve, you're going to have a specific area of nerve damage, which means that on the skin, you'll have a specific area of either numbness or hypersensitivity or phantom pain. Ah. Now, do we know of any diseases that attack nerves? You should know one from microbiology. Starts with an H. Yes. Herpes, yes. So herpes attacks nerves. Now, from South Park, you know that blank is a form of herpes virus. You should also know it from micro. Herpes zoster. The herpes zoster, also known as varicella. Commonly known in English as chickenpox. Chickenpox is a herpes virus which attacks nerves. Now, the first time a person gets the chickenpox, they get the chickenpox. Does it ever go away? No. It stays dormant in your nerves and can later in life come back as a disease called shingles. Shingles only appears along a dermatome, the dermatome that's being affected by those shingle by that shingle virus, the varicella virus. So the way that you can recognize shingles is it's a rash that goes along a dermatome. Now, That sounds kind of out there right now, but I'm telling you, the very first time you see it in a patient, you'll go, oh, that's what Dr. Heyman was talking about. So here you can see the shingles. It's along one strip of the person's back, and that's because that strip of skin is being affected by that nerve. Now, notice why it's only on one side of the body. Why is it not on the other side of the body? Right, because you have a pair of nerves, and only one of those pairs is being affected. So this is what shingles looks like. At that point, it could be, yes. So a dermatome looks something like this. So you have each one of the nerves is innervating a strip of skin. So that's what we talk about by dermatomes. So the reason it's important is because, first of all, shingles always attacks along a dermatome. And the other is that if you have nerve damage, you're going to have a specific area of numbness, hypersensitivity, or phantom pain. So now we will pull these down for future use. All right. Next, we have functional divisions. Now, functional divisions does not... Before, we were talking about anatomical divisions. What is anatomy?